Imagine walking in the watchtower with a 27-pound Bible like this. I always thought Texans were all 7 feet tall. We got people taller than you in Nova Scotia. That was probably the worst introduction I've ever had. But I know it was done in love, and I thank you very much. I'm getting even. I have the microphone now. That's right, I am from Canada. Thank you very much. And Canada is your northern neighbor. It's about, according to this apex, it's about 3,000 miles west of Europe. And we have, in Canada, there's, as according to the 19... I'm sorry, I have a sore throat. I brought it down from Canada with me. Actually, I picked it up on the way through in Maine. And since I've been here, I've noticed a lot of my American brothers are coughing and holding their throats. So that's our gift to you from Canada. Since the snow's all melted, we wanted something lasting. In Canada, we have something that I brought as a gift to the Zapex. It's newly minted. It's a gold coin, and it's a dollar coin. And it's called the Looney, after some of our prime ministers. Really, it has a loon on it. And Marilyn is willing to give each and every one of you one or order one for you. They're a dollar Canadian, which is a dollar 35 American. And they're not legal in Texas because many of them are breaking their teeth on them trying to get the chocolate out. Thank you. That's not true. I'm sorry. I had a terrible dream last night. I dreamt that I lost my notes. Then I woke up and found I didn't have any. So, scratched a few here. My testimony is not very exciting, but it's the only one I have. And we have 9 children in our family. 5 boys. I have 1 wife. 5 boys, 4 girls, 6 goldfish, and 2 cats. No, I'm sorry. 1 wife, 5 boys, 4 girls, no goldfish, and 2 happy cats. Do I have a talk? Yeah. Through the Valley of the Shadow. Running for about 120 miles east and west of Nova Scotia is called the Annapolis Valley, and that's where I'm from. And the shadow spoken of is, as mentioned in Psalms 23, I won't quote it, but it's the valley of the shadow of death. And we have a large population of Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Baha'is, and there's a lot of occult activity going on. So there is truly a shadow over our valley. And that's what Makaira Ministries is all about. Before I start, anyone want to guess? The latest census for the Jehovah's Witness population in Canada is 1981. Anybody want to guess how many Jehovah's Witnesses were in Canada as of 1981? 144,000. So you can take that for what it's worth. I don't think they're all the anointed, though, because I left, and I certainly wasn't. I am from Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, originally, which is the southwestern tip of Nova Scotia, where they make all the fog. It's very foggy down there, and people in Yarmouth tend to speak very quickly. And I remember when I first started in this ministry, my wife would write across my notes, "Talk slowly." So if I switch into Yarmouth mode and start babbling and no one understands me, I am not speaking in tongues. Just raise your hand and just tell me to slow down, and I'll do that. At age 15... 1964, I started studying with Jehovah's Witnesses, and I was, a mental Jehovah's Witness from that time on. And my mother was a Roman Catholic. Poor Russell's really having a hard time today. And she was, a certain priest was not very kind to her, and Mom kind of turned off of the whole Catholic Church, which I don't think was fair, of course. And I started studying with, as I mentioned, with a Jehovah's Witness because I was sent to church rather than taken, and I had a lot of desire to learn the word. And of course, this little old lady who came to the door, her name was Mrs. Fenton. Mom always took pity on her and brought her in because out of the rain, because it was always raining down there, and offered her a cup of tea, and she spoke for hours. And one time I was in the living room overhearing this conversation, and she was talking about a new order, which is Don Nelson's green leafy vegetable with the grapes this big from last year. I have that tape, by the way. I watch it every once in a while. And she would talk about no false teeth. Now, this woman had a fixation on false teeth. I don't know why. She always ended with that. And just think, Mrs. Knowles, no false teeth. And I thought, well, so what? But she seemed to have back up everything she taught by the Bible, and that impressed me. So I asked my mom, thank you. I asked my mom, and oh, but in Canada, it's mom, not mom, okay? So that's my mom. If it would be all right if I took a Bible study with this lady. And she said, no, I would rather you take a Bible study from a man. She was sort of a chauvinist in reverse, I guess. So I started a Bible study with the elder of the congregation. They had seven in the congregation, and the elder lived in the back of the Kingdom Hall and cleaned phone booths for a living. He was very dedicated and a beautiful man, and I hope he's a Christian now, because he was a wonderful person. His name was Bill Bolaski, and he taught me all I needed to know out of the truth book. Now, we would help supplement Bill's meager income by giving him fish that friends of ours said. We had friends that were fishermen, by the way. Yarmouth is a fishing port. And he was very dedicated. When he was transferred out, he went to the Ivory Coast with his wife, and he almost died there. Both he and his wife got very sick. And another Bill from Petrolia, Ontario, took over. He was a bit different. My mother mentioned one time that she had just attended a week earlier the funeral of her sister. And this other Bill, he said, well, I suppose that the Catholic priest put her directly in heaven, or put her in purgatory, didn't he? And that did not sit well with my mother. It was a very unkind thing to do. So eventually I stopped the study, but I was fully convinced mentally that the Jehovah's Witnesses were right. At age 17, I met my wife. Guess what religion she is? Hey! Yes, she was Catholic. And, of course, she tried to defend her faith with a book called My Catholic Faith. Do you remember that one? That book was, it was rather, I think it was pre-Vatican II, but it was very pictorial as far as what purgatory looked like and what it was like. Salvation was only found within the Catholic Church. It was before the liberalization of the Catholic Church. Very easy to refute, and it caused all kinds of problems. So, after I graduated from high school, this was in 1967, and I had just finished studying the 1966 Life Everlasting and Freedom of the Sons of God book, and it was just before the 1968 Awake. So guess what? Should I go to college? Well, of course not. Why should I go to college when there's only 7 or 8 years left? And that was mentally in the back of my mind ticking off how many years to 1975? 7, 6, 5, 4, and so on. So Yvonne's father would not let us get married if I retained my Jehovah's Witness beliefs. So I put it all on hold, thinking, well, surely Jehovah will bring her back into the fold or into the fold after we're married. How many of you think that people are going to change after they're married? How many of you have a husband or a wife who has very irritating qualities that get better after you get married? No. They get more intense once you get married. And so we had our first baby a year later, and that was Corey. He's with us. By the way, there will be three Canadians up here, so you are outnumbered. We're going to try, and maybe while I'm speaking, if my voice gets worse, maybe you could say a silent prayer for me, because there's a few songs I'd like to share, and I may be making a joyful noise unto the Lord, but I want you to hear the words, because they're quite meaningful. So when our first baby, Corey, was born, what was in my mind? Well, is he safe since I am not allied with Jehovah's organization? Of course not. He's not sanctified or set apart or under the protective watchtower umbrella. So a year after he was born, or a few months after he was born, I started making moves to go back into the society. Yvonne picked up on that right away, and all the problems we had before we were married came back to the fore, and things got really serious. She was going to have to leave me. Because as she said, years later, it was like having Satan living in the house with you. I couldn't watch a news program without picking out all the bad and throwing it at Yvonne, saying, well, you know, maybe this will convince her that the end is coming, that there's no hope anywhere but within the society. I would be looking for feasts and famines. I knew how to cook dandelions 27 different ways. And that type of thing, and she knew that, and I was sneaking my watchtower. She couldn't even stand the smell of them. Remember the old watchtower and the old publications had this funny smell to them? Did anyone ever notice that? You're sitting in bed and you're reading this, and all of a sudden, whoosh. Oh, theocratic odors. She still gets nauseous when she smells that smell. So I put it again on the back burner. A year later, our second son, Jason, was born. Same thing. I got really hairy. So, see if I find my notes that I lost. So, again, it was the same problem. I remember calling my dad. And my dad said, my dad called him. He said, Larry, he said, Yvonne just called. And she said that you're going to go back into that foolishness, he called it. He was right. I guess he was a prophet. And I said, he said, don't you love your children? I said, well, Dad, it's because I love my children that I want to go back. Because don't you understand that Jehovah, this mighty God on his high and lofty throne, is going to destroy them if I'm not a member in good standing of the Watchtower Society. Regardless of whether or not I bring them in to the hall, if I'm a member, they're sanctified by my association with me. The fellow from Texas is doing that. I'm going to ignore him. No, he's not. So I stood at the microphone, so you haven't... And this caused problems, but then again, I couldn't see our family pulling apart. And there were very serious divisions. It was the only thing, major thing, that Yvonne and I disagreed on. But it was a major thing. Neither one of us knew at that time that Jesus is the only glue that holds families together. That nothing else will, nothing else can. And if the Lord doesn't marry you, then it's not going to work. It's just a lesson in futility. So, again, on the back burner. Now, at this time, I was considering going professional into music. So I had a fellow in Kentville area that really believed in me. I was playing in bands and so on. And so we moved to Ontario in 1973, between 73 and 74. And I quit my job, and I moved up, and I was going to go into music professionally. Now, in 1974, or thereabouts, the comet Kohoutek was coming. Do you remember that? Maybe that was a sign. That scared me right back into the kingdom. And again, at that time, my wife, Yvonne, couldn't take it anymore. So she took the two children, and she left me. I remember to this day driving down to the train station, and her with the two little kids all excited about this trip, and we were breaking up. And she was weeping, and I was weeping, and the train was going, and the kids were in the window waving goodbye, all happy. And I went back without it. I thanked the Lord that all this was over by the time we had our other children. So I went back home without a job, because the band thing, the music thing didn't work out, back into the society in the Bay Ridges congregation, and just outside of Pickering, Ontario. And my agent turned out to be a homosexual who told me that if I didn't come across, he was going to kill me, set fire to our apartment, and then kill himself. And my wife was gone. So it was rather a hard thing, but I was doing it for Jehovah. Because even if I lost my children physically, then at least I would have them for eternity. I would like to have Yvonne for eternity as well. But that was her decision. Her eternal destiny was decided upon her. But as man of the house, husband, and head of the family, then it was my responsibility for the eternal welfare of my children. By the way, in Bay Ridge's congregation at this time, it was in 1974, I was told by the elder that when I do get a job, get a menial job, because when the angel of death comes, he's going to strike down those in higher positions in authority first, and we don't want him making a mistake and get one of us by accident. As a matter of fact, he had a job as shop steward in a factory, and he quit, and he's admonished others in this congregation to quit if they had jobs, managerial type of jobs, because this might happen. So they all of a sudden... Bay Ridges became the cleanest area in all of Ontario because they all became janitors. The kingdom's going to be clean, my friends, believe me. So then 3 or 4 weeks later, since I'm such a wonderful person, my wife moved back. Thank you. And we decided to move back to the valley. Now, in the valley, I joined the Centerville congregation. I'm being specific on dates and on names and so on, because Jehovah's Witnesses now deny that I was ever baptized, that I was ever a Jehovah's Witness at all, and that I ever went door to door. I didn't leave my nose prints on as many doors, and perhaps as some of you did, because of the problem I was having at home, but I did go door to door a lot. So I joined the congregation in Centerville. I was baptized as a Jehovah's Witness in June of 1974. Now, if the Jehovah's Witnesses had the foresight to know what I'd be doing what I'm doing now, they would have dipped me three times and took me up twice, I'm sure. But they didn't do that. It was at a district assembly in Moncton, New Brunswick. And again, Yvonne and I had our problems. They all came before. I was now a baptized Jehovah's Witness. And one day, I came home with the worst thing I possibly could have come home with. A Jehovah's Witness theocratic haircut. It was up to here. I never did like short hair. I mean, you might notice by now. And it was up to here, and it came all the way around my ears, and I got the biggest ears you ever saw, the handles of a sugar bowl. And she just about went nuts. And, oh, by the way, the question from you tells us how we should behave in bed as a married couple. Now, I'm sure you have heard of that, and perhaps experienced the problems with a mixed couple, non-witness and witness couple. Not in the specifics of what they say, but the fact that the society was getting in the bedrooms. That didn't help much either. So again, we split up. I lived in a one-room apartment in Kentville, which is about 8 miles from our home in Canning, and Yvonne stayed home with the two boys. Now, the elder said, "Why did you do that? You left your house. You abandoned her from the eyes of the world." I said, "No, I didn't." I said, "If I hadn't have, she just couldn't stand anymore." Yvonne was desperately trying to find someone that could help deal with this problem. She went to the Divinity College, which is just a few miles from our home, and she got a lesson in church history. She went to the local Catholic priest, and he started tearing me down, and she began defending me, because she could say anything she wanted about me and about my faith, but if anyone made derogatory remarks about me, she would just all claws and teeth. She wouldn't stand it. But she couldn't find any help at all. So she was completely frustrated. So I said, "Look, if you stay here with the two little ones, keep the car in the house, I know that you are being looked after. I know where you are. I know you're out somewhere with the two children, goodness knows where. And I'll find a place for myself." That was my thinking. The elder said, "No, she should take off with the kids. Whatever she gets, she deserves." I said, "Wait a minute, I love this woman. She's my wife. I married her. I married her because I loved her, and I still do." And he said, "Well, it doesn't matter. You should have exercised headship." That's the first thing I saw. Well, wait, where's the love in all this? So I lived in this little room, and I'd walk the 8 miles on weekends to see the kids, and I'd leave with them clinging to either one of my legs, just crying, and I'd be crying, and she'd be crying. But I had to do it for Jehovah, for their protection, their eternal welfare. So I'd move back to my room, and I'd look at their pictures on the little dresser, and I'd weep, because those are my babies, and I couldn't see them except for weekends. It was a terrible situation. Most of the money that I had after I paid bills, I gave to Yvonne to look after the kids and so on. And I think I allowed myself $5 a week to live on. And I remember one Sunday, or the people that owned the room were gone, and I was starving. I had $1.07. So I went out and bought a TV dinner. And I got it home, and I realized I didn't know how to work the stove. It was a propane stove, and I was afraid I'd blow myself up and get to the kingdom before I really planned. All they had was a hot plate. So I took the TV dinner, and I put it on the hot plate. Turned it on high. It was frozen, right? Ended up with this frozen TV dinner with a burnt middle. So I thought, well, okay, it's still all right. There's some things I can recognize in there. So I put it all in the pot and put the pot on the hot plate and burnt the whole darn thing. So I went back to my box of crackers, and there used to be a box of crackers called Betcha Bacon. Betcha, if you had a bit, you wish you had a bunch. I got so sick on those things. They've repackaged them in another name, and I can't even look at them. I just rushed by when I walked by because I made myself so sick on them. But they kept body and soul together. Well, body and self. But it kept me together. So, anyway, Yvonne and I got back together again after about a month of that foolishness. And we decided to go our separate ways. I'd attend my watchtower meetings all 5 a week in a book study, and I would get up and raise my hand and say, 4! Good answer, Brother Knowles. And at the end of the meeting, they'd say, well, appreciated your comments, Brother Knowles. I said, well, I was on my way to being an elder. So, one Sunday morning, I got up. Someone's answered that before. That's the question. You might remember the question. I got up in the morning. I came downstairs. And guess what? There were 7 strangers sitting in my living room on the couch, on the chair. Yvonne had bought a turkey the day before, and she was feeding it to these strange people. I said, Yvonne, what's going on? She said, well, this is Dr. North and Stephen and Alan North and other people that I won't mention because they're still ashamed they did it. They're here to deprogram you. Okay. All right. Okay. Fair enough. They've all since become close friends of mine, by the way. But this Dr. North had a son who got involved in the Hare Krishna. And he was really deep in there. He was so bad that he had told his father later that if he had been told to kill his parents to save them from Satan, that he would have done it. They grabbed him and kidnapped him out of that cult and brought him home. And on the way home, they stopped in to get some Kentucky Fried Chicken. We had that up there, Northern Kentucky Fried Chicken. And it's not frozen. And he was sitting in the back, and his eyes about this big, and he would call them cannibals for eating flesh and so on. He was right out of it. Finally, after a year or so of working with me, he finally came out. And these people were trying to use those same tactics on me as a Jehovah's Witness. It didn't work. Because I found out that one was a Catholic, one was a Baptist, one was a Presbyterian, one was a nothing. And I started shooting questions at him. I would say, well, what about hell? What's hell? Well, hell is it's a place of eternal torment. I said, is it? Do you believe that? Well, hell could be just separation from God. I said, wait a minute now, what is it? I had them arguing amongst themselves over what hell was. They had a concordance and a Bible, and they were flipping back and forth, and they're getting very confused. So I thought I'd test them. I got up, and I made that I was going to leave. One of them grabbed me. I still feel the... His grip, he was about this big, from Texas, I think. He grabbed me, and he threw me back on the couch. And I said, there, I've got something on you. You physically restrained me in my own house, and I can sue you. That made them very upset. I found out later that really shook them up, because they were not ready for a lawsuit. They didn't expect that type of thing. They expected me to start in a chant. By the way, in order to be saved in Hare Krishna, you have to say Hare Krishna 1,728 times a day. And they thought that's the kind of thing that I was doing, you know. And you know what? I was. Because I sat on the couch, closed my eyes, and my mind went back to previous Watchtower articles. That was a mantra of sorts, wasn't it? I was dipping myself back. I was getting a shot of Watchtowerism. And basically it was the same thing. But they didn't know how to deal with that. Finally they gave out. They said that if you keep out of the Watchtower for a week and don't study your witness literature, then you will leave. I said, okay, we'll try that. So I went to this doctor's house 3 nights in a row, and he was sure that it didn't work because he didn't know the scriptures, and I just chewed him up and spit him out again. So that didn't work. But it was an idea of how drastically frustrated and how desperate Yvonne was, because she saw the changes in me. I'm usually an easygoing type of person, and I would watch the news. I'd get all upset. My gosh, Yvonne, we're going to be eating leaves off our pear tree next week. Earthquake somewhere in San Salvador measured 4.6 on the Richter scale. Is it coming this way? You know, you've all been through that. I'm not telling you anything new. And I was just a different person. And oftentimes I would go to the hall when I really didn't feel like going to the hall, because I knew that when I went to the hall, our meetings were from 10 to 12 on Sunday. When I got back, I knew what I'd have for dinner. Hot tongue and cold shoulder. Because we get back into the same problems, because she couldn't stand it. And I can see that. We started hearing weird noises around the house and all kinds of things whenever we tried to discuss this thing and work it out, which you couldn't work out. It was an oil and water situation. So I wrote a couple songs in the Kingdom Hall, or for the Kingdom Hall, the Kingdom Song. One of them was based on Habakkuk, though the fig tree itself will not blossom, I will exalt Jehovah. I wrote a song based around that. And I was considered an extremely fine example to the Watchtower people and to the... the other witnesses, because I was having all these problems at home. I had already made a stand and lost my family on two occasions. And there I was singing songs, and I was dragged from one congregation hall to the other. I was taken out on this platform and dusted off and said, oh, look what we found, you know. And they give a little bit of my testimony for me. They gave it to me. I didn't, because I couldn't, because I wasn't an elder. And I'd sing my songs, and everyone said, oh, isn't that wonderful, and applause and so on. And one time I had an elder tell me, I was at his house, and I was running through another song that I had written for him. He loved it. It had Jehovah in it, every second word. I guess that's why. And he said, you know, he said, I was born and raised in the truth. He said, and you were not, and you gave up your family for the truth. He said, I don't think I could do that. And it was a fine, fine example to do. By the way, would you mind getting a haircut? And it was that, I remember one time I went to a hall, and the elder, about 5 minutes before I was going on to sing, he said, come on. So he took me down to the basement. I thought, what is this? Am I being initiated or what? He said, would you mind tucking your hair up over your ears so it looks shorter? I mean, it was that type of thing. It was a real heavy thing. And I said, that was number two. I said, isn't this ridiculous? I'm up here singing kingdom songs to glorify Jehovah, and he's worried about how long my hair is. Matter of fact, his haircut was, and it still is, from 1953. And it slicked back like this, like he's going 100 miles an hour down the road. And it's all curly in the front. And he wears white shoes, a gray suit, and a purple tie. And he wanted me to get a haircut to look more reasonable. That speaks volumes, I think. Well, I started drifting out after a while. I just have to mention a few things. We did have problems. I hated October in our house when I was a witness, because October 11th was my oldest son's birthday. October the 14th was my wife's birthday. And in October you had Thanksgiving. Then after October you had November the 11th, which in Canada is Remembrance Day, which you wear a poppy, another pagan symbol. November 11th is the anniversary of the signing of the armistice after the First World War, and it's like your Veterans Day. And then comes, or Halloween, end of October. Halloween was a time that I dreaded. Yvonne didn't dress the kids up as goblins or witches or ghosts or Baptists or anything like that. But what she did do, she would take them out door to door, which I thought was a good idea, that part of it, with the little treat bag. I was told by an elder to put past issues of the Watchtower in their bags door to door. Any of you ever experienced that? I mean, I couldn't do that to a kid, even though I was a witness. I mean, I just couldn't see doing that. You know, what's this? Well, more poison in your bag, son. Don't eat it. So one time, Yvonne had this big bowl full of these Halloween kisses, you know, the toffee, gooey stuff. And we couldn't afford much, so she got them from last year, so the paper would stick to them. She had this big bowl of them. They just heaped. And she said, now, we wanted peace. She said, just for me, I want you to put that bowl by the door, and when kids come, just throw a few candies in their bag, because I'm taking the little ones out to our neighbors to trick-or-treat. Now, do you know that taking a candy kiss out of a bowl and putting it in a bag of a 3 or 4-year-old will condemn you eternally? That Gog and Magog will get you. So I wasn't going to touch that stuff. I mean, that's all pagan. It even had a witch on it, and it was orange and black, and the wrapping. So I put it aside, and I said, yes, I will. So she took off. As soon as she left, I turned every light in the house off. And I hid behind the curtains, terrified that I might hear on the door. And I did. I heard this little... And I hid behind the curtains, hoping they wouldn't move. And I thought, well, this is justice. I mean, many people hid behind the curtains when I was going door to door. And so I got up from behind the curtains, and I snuck behind the couch, and I peeked, and there were two little kids there. And they were emissaries from Satan, because they wanted me to put a candy in their bag. So I didn't. So anyway, after about an hour of this, there was no more knocks on the door. Pardon me, on the door. And Yvonne came home. I could see her driving in the driveway, and I thought, oh my God, the lights are off, and the candy is all still in the bowl. So I switched the lights on real quick, and I went to that bowl, and I unwrapped those ugly candy, and I kept about 23 of them, some of them wrappers and all, because you couldn't get the wrappers off. Then I stuck these wrappers in my pocket. Did you get any kids? Oh, yeah. Oh, well, just a few. I said, I didn't tell her this till later. So she put the bowl away. And then after that, one other thing that stands in my mind is Christmas. Christmas was rough. I loved Christmas when I was a kid. It was a magic time, and it was a time for all the specials on TV about Christ and about the birth and all that. But it was pagan. And we, according to Jeremiah, we brought a tree in and we worshipped it. How many of you worshipped a Christmas tree? So I could have nothing to do. I couldn't even touch the darn thing. So I sat in the living room while my wife, who was darn determined she was going to get a Christmas tree for the kids, went out and got a cat spruce. You know what a cat spruce is? You know what a house smells like if you leave 300 cats in it over a week? That's what it smells like. So she went outside and she got the tree and she said, I'm darn well going to have Christmas. So Corey and Jason were about this big. They went out to help her and they pulled the tree in through the door, front, top first. And the tree was going, boom, boom, boom. It was about four limbs left on it by the time she was done. She had 10 miles of rope holding that darn thing in the corner. Nail holes all in my wall. But they had Christmas. And I went and bought a turkey because you have to eat anyway, right? I mean, we're not going to stop having turkey just because it's a pagan holiday. And my brother, who's always been very close to me and knew about this witness stuff, he sent me a present, a Christmas present. And on it, he had written, "This is not a Christmas present." And yeah. Along the ribbon, he had written, "This is not a Christmas ribbon." And all on the paper, "This is not Christmas paper." So that was like Christmas is like at our house. And my birthday, I want you all to get your pencils out because my birthday is March 4th. And I've got cards here in case you want to send something by parcel post because I do accept Christmas presents now. But my birthday was something else, March the 4th. You know, March 4th, that's how I remember it as a kid. We didn't have a birthday party. My wife had Jolly Good Daddy Day. bless her heart. She it just happened to fall on the same day as my birthday. And I had a cake and some candles. Jolly Good Daddy candles. I remember looking at the candle one time and saying, gee, the light does get brighter and brighter. As the wax draws nigh. So those are the kind of things that we had. And Yvonne's home with the children. She 100% supports me in this ministry. As a matter of fact, she's the heart of my ministry. I'm the one that does the research and that goes and shows the film and makes a comment. But Yvonne's the one that says, don't you think you should? Or why don't you take time to... She's, like I say, the heart of the ministry. And I'll never forget the first seminar I did, the first talk. I had this 48-pound case that has witness literature on one side and anti-witness literature on the other side. And the kids had gotten into it, and I didn't know that. So I was telling people, I was building them up for the truth book. I was saying, you know, this is one of the world's worst, most dangerous books in the world. And I reached in my case, and I pulled out my puppy. Wrong book. So I'm not going to talk too much longer because I feel my voice is going and I do want to make a noise for you. All this was going on. Often people wonder, what got you out of your organization? Were you zapped? Did you fall off your horse? I have a Hyundai Pony, which I smashed up in August, but that wasn't quite the same as Paul's experience. And I said, no, I just saw no love there. And I felt like I was going to school forever. It was the only thing is, it was the same subjects over and over again. Yes, Brother Knowles. Can I go to the washroom? Enjoyed your comment, Brother Knowles. Be back in a flush. So, I'm sorry. I am from Canada. Thank you. That's where you get your water from. And we do believe in free trade. We really do. We'd like to trade the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation for Huey Lewis in the News, if you don't mind. So I needed something. I drifted out of the Watchtower Society, and it was God's sole channel of truth. I knew it wasn't, but I gained out of the Watchtower into what I spent almost 3 years in that limbo. There's that word. I used it to give me a dollar after. Limbo. But I had such a mental block on the Trinity that I just could not accept the Trinity. How can you accept a triune God? As Leonard said, if you go into a church where you got demons dripping off the ceiling, you don't dare enter that. So I really need some help. And I remember one time at work, I went in my prayer room when nobody else was using it. And I said, Lord, you've got to help me. You've got to help me. I'm going crazy. I know Jehovah's Witnesses are wrong. They're starting to shun me already. But I've preached against the regular organized religions, Christendom, so long. What? It's true. You've got to help me. So that noon hour, I went to lunch. And I was sitting at the window table. And I saw this black man walking the street. And for some reason, he attracted my attention. And I couldn't get my eyes off him. And we walked across the street, and he walked right into the restaurant, and he spoke to the girl at the counter. And I could just see love coming from that man. So then he turned around and he left. Well, I left my meal half finished, which is unusual for me. And I went and I said, who was that man? And she looked at me very suspiciously and said, well, he's our pastor. I said, of what? She said, well, we have a Macedonian Baptist church, of which there are 5 members. And he's from the Toronto Baptist Seminary, and he's sort of a pioneer church. He's the pastor. So I paid my bill, and I went and I chased him down, and I introduced myself, and I gave him a 20-minute sermon in about 3 minutes, but talk of my background, because I was so desperate. He invited me to his place for lunch the next day. And that started a relationship where we met 3 times a week for lunch. One day it was my turn to bring lunch, the next day it was his. And he was living on a shoestring as well. But he knew the Word, and he loved the Word. And he only had 5 or 6 in his congregation, but there must have been 100 people that had passed through and that he had planted seeds on the way through. So he introduced me to the real Christ. And I thank him for it, and I love him so much. As a matter of fact, last year I was in Toronto on a course, a computer course, and he's still in Toronto, and we arranged to meet at a mall up in Eglinton, I guess it was. And when I went to the mall, I had to wait for another 10, 15 minutes. And I looked, I like to study people, and there were people all over the place. There was a lot of black people here and the white people here. And everyone's so stirred and look on their face. And when I first met them in the mall, we ran towards each other, just like in these little movies where you run in slow motion. And we embraced, and we just cried, and everyone was going. The white people were going. The black people were going. But it was symbolic of what true brothers are really like, and we had such a wonderful time. And we had lunch together, and he paid for a change. And he was the one who performed my baptismal ceremony in 1983 as a Christian. And that's when I was really baptized. So to make a long story short, which is too late, as I mentioned, I regressed a little bit. We did form Makaira Ministries in 1984. The word Makaira is the Greek word for short stabbing sword. Am I right, Paul? Brother, you haven't been reading your Watchtowers. Yeah, that's what it is. It's the same word used in Ephesians chapter 6. Take the sword of the Spirit. Okay. Paul's going to go home and look it up for me. Will you call me when you... And that's also the sword that Paul used when he said we wrestle with Satan. It was used for close infighting. It wasn't like Darth Vader's where you stood back and just slashed each other. It was used for close infighting. How many of you feel that we have a close wrestling with Satan and with his demonic forces? Exactly. And that's why we chose the word Makaira. The witnesses say that Makaira Ministries and the support group are a hate group, a neo-Nazi organization, and that I'm starting my own religion up there on the mountain somewhere. And, of course, they have more opportunity for advertising than we do because they go door-to-door and we don't as yet, but we plan to. One thing that Makaira Ministries and myself will not do, and lots of times I do seminars and people will, people aren't being fed. How many of you go into a church and you know the word has never been preached there? That breaks my heart. I have deacons come up to me and say, what do you mean being born again? I have people, long-time church members saying, well, when the witnesses talk about the Trinity being wrong, well, I guess that must be. And it just breaks my heart. I know there's places I've gone and I preach the word and people, the pastor just or the pastor or the priest or the minister, whatever. In some cases, they're just staring holes through me saying, what do you think you're doing? What are you telling my people? But I tell them what the Holy Spirit wants me to tell them. And it's a great way. Never neglect that part of your ministry. It's a good way to get into churches that are not being fed. So I will not involve or get involved in Catholic bashing. I will not get involved in Baptist beating or Pentecost. I won't get arguing with someone with tongues. The Holy Spirit wants to give you tongues. He'll give you tongues. Doesn't matter whether it's theologically correct or not. I'm not going to get involved in that anymore. And my wife is a Christian Catholic. Yeah, there is such a thing. There's many of them. Even if they're not Canadians, they still can happen. And we have a Bible study group. The majority of them are Christian Catholics. Yvonne told me one time that if the Catholic Church fell down around her ears, it wouldn't affect her relationship with Christ, but that's her tradition. And she loves it, and that's fine. I'm a Baptist. I'm a Christian Baptist. My children are Roman Catholics. Or Baptists, I don't know. But I will batter Satan whenever I can. I will batter the cults whenever I can. I'll share an experience. One friend of mine, he just became a friend, he came up to see what we were all about, this support group. And he's a genius. I can't think of, he writes books, he does documentaries. He was a witness till he was 16. By the time he was 7, he had given over 200 talks at the Kingdom Halls. He was a child protege, who he was. That man carries around so many scars. His father has been out of the truth for 30 years and still convinced that it's the truth. And these are people we have to pray for, because he's waiting for Armageddon to destroy him because he's too bad to go back. I get a bit emotional when I think of this. He called his son in BC, and he talked rather aimlessly to him for a while. And his son couldn't figure out the reason for the call. He called because it was lightning and thunder out, and he thought maybe it was the end. And he still does. These people got to be helped. And this is what I tell him. I said, Cameron, you have to talk to your dad. This fellow was not a Christian yet, but I'm working on him. The Lord's working on him, I should say. He saw the film, he thought it was great. I thought he was going to tear it down. Intellectually, he was going to critique it. He didn't. He thought it was terrific. He thought that it maybe was a little bit biased. I said, why? I said, remember, it was written by Christians. But remember this, it was produced by ex-witnesses for the most part. Do you see any bitterness or hatred there? He said, no, I don't. I said, isn't that a miracle? He said, well, yeah, I guess so, if you believe in miracles. So, by the way, the film has been working really well for us. We've only had it for about 3 weeks. We've had 20 to 25 showings of it, private and non-private. And there, some people think that Leonard Marjorie made a whole lot of money off it, because of that last scene of the sun over the water, they think, my, anyone can afford a swimming pool that large. Imagine the chlorine that goes in that thing. I'm just kidding. What we've been doing, we can't afford the film. We have the VCR. But what we've done, I got a three-way signal splitter. That way I can show the film on three televisions at the same time, or more, depending on the signal splitter you get. So what we do, if we have an audience of 150 or more, we put three televisions among the congregation, and we just show it. And it works out quite well. Until we can afford we do take donations, until we can afford the big film. And there's a Leonard and Marjorie fan club now in Nova Scotia. And I'm going to ask my boys to come up, and before my boys completely give out, and share a couple songs that we've written. And normally we have our own amplifiers, we have a little drum machine, and I have a voice. And both boys have got the colds as well. They helped me bring it down to you. And so we're going to have to do it rather in the raw. But I want you to listen to the words, if you can make them out. And one thing that I really want to share with you, I had asked the Lord about 2 years ago to give me a burden, not only for Jehovah's Witnesses, which I had already had, but for Mormons. And they have a beautiful building in our area, and they have several doctors that are Mormons, and the head of the school association is a Mormon. So I went to this open house, And I asked the Lord to give me the love, that show me the love that he has for him. And after the open house, I went back to my office and I just wept for about 2 hours, because that's exactly what he did. Because I pictured these Mormons and witnesses and cultists and so on standing before the judge, standing before the Lord with their hands out like this, and their hands full of all the works they had done and all the hours they had put in. And the Lord looked at them and said, I never wanted your junk. I wanted you. And he says, get away from me. I never knew you. That breaks my heart when I think of that. And we never want to not lose sight of that. And I want to share one scripture with you. I guess it's about time, Paul. Paul said use a scripture. And this is not my Bible, by the way. It's Tom Sapex who lent it to me. And Tom's built like Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's why he can lift it with ease. And it's John 6, 28 and 29. And it's the same question that Jehovah's Witnesses will ask when they get out of the organization. Then they asked him, what must we do to do the works God requires? Jesus answered, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. And that's all. To believe in the one he has sent. Can we handle that work? Of course we can. That's all that's required. So I'm going to share one song by myself first, and the boys are getting geared up. And it's a song that some of you may be familiar with, at least the subject matter. And I'll just let you listen to it, see what you think.